MoneyWeb now on the money.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. I'm chatting with Richard Marcus, Director in Dispute Resolution at CDH. Richard, appreciate the time. The Expropriation Act, it's Act 13 of 2024, replacing the old Act from 1975. It's been signed by the President, but as I understand, we don't yet have a commencement date.
That's correct. The Act has been signed, but as yet no promulgation date. Mm-hmm. So the Act is not yet the law. And we've seen already there have been challenges to procedure, so it remains to be seen how soon it will become the law.
Yeah, a process, I suppose we should say, is absolutely happening. The Act really, the purpose is to provide for expropriation of property, public purpose, or in public interest. A notable addition, however, is where certain instances where provision of no compensation may be just and equitable. Is that really the sort of, I mean, that's been the standout, that's been the headlines that we've seen. Is that the significant change amongst some others that perhaps aren't as big?
That is certainly the most significant change, because the Act is anchored in the Constitution in Section 25, which has a series of factors which you apply to decide whether you can expropriate a property, but that always contemplated compensation. The new thing is the idea of nil compensation in certain, and I must add, some very limited circumstances.
I want to dig into those, and I want to particularly look at agricultural. But before we do, property, I'm assuming it's immovable property, but is it also potentially movable property?
The Act covers all kinds of property. It can be both movable and immovable. But in the case of land, that is the only type of property where the concept of nil compensation applies.
Okay, got you on that one. So what factors would constitute just an equitable compensation, and if there is to be? And I suppose the big question is, who gets to decide this?
Very good question. And perhaps I can answer that in two parts and just say, what is the normal or the factor that apply normally to any kind of acquisition by expropriation? And this really repeats what's in Section 25 of the Constitution. So the first part of the Act says, it must be just and equitable, so it's got to look at public interest and the rights of those affected. So those rights would be the rights of owners, of bondholders, other rights of land and property. The normal circumstances, leaving aside the nil compensation factors, the normal factors are you look at what it's used at or used for at the moment. You look at how it was acquired and how it's been used in the past. You look at its market value. And you also, in the case of state land, usually look at the extent of state investment. And you always look at the purpose of expropriation. It's got to be, as we now know, in the public interest or for a public purpose. Those are the normal criteria. So that's every expropriation act will look at that. Nil compensation is a particular provision. It's the contentious one. It's Section 12.3 of the new Act. And it says it may be just and equitable for nil to be paid, having regard to all the circumstances. So that would also include the circumstances normally I've just mentioned. But there are four categories where it seems to be focusing on. And in a way, it distinguishes between private and public land. For private owners, it's this. It says two factors are important for them. It's where the land is not being used, so it's dormant. And the owner's main purpose is not to develop the land or use it to generate income. So it's just being held there to benefit for market appreciation over time. So dormant land, not under any plans for development, just sitting idly waiting for its value to increase. That's the one factor for private owners primarily. Another ground is if the land is apparently abandoned. So it's hard to believe that land can become abandoned over time. People can just walk away. The registered owner might never use it for anything. I think, for example, of the buildings in Johannesburg City Center, which are effectively being abandoned by their owners. And that would be a very good example of perhaps where this Act could provide a useful function to repurpose derelict buildings which aren't being used, which have no value. So those are the two private factors. One must remember that land owned by state organs can also be expropriated for nil value. And similar considerations apply. Is it being used for its core function? Does that particular organ of state have a need for that land? Is it just being also left idle for no purpose? And also, if the state's already invested money in the land, and although it's compensating, the amount of its investment is worth more than the land itself.
Gotcha.
So that's quite a long answer. Please, if you want to ask any more specific questions.
It makes perfect sense, absolutely. But the one thing that stands out, and I'm not the expert here, but let's say I've got a viable farm somewhere, that to me doesn't tick any of those boxes because it's being used, it hasn't been abandoned, it is my own private land, and that kind of my thinking says that would exclude it from this act.
I don't think you'd ever say categorically it's excluded, but it would run into serious, such an intent to expropriate would run into serious headwinds because taking into account things like public interest, if you have to weigh up the just and equitable considerations, if it's a productive farm, you've got a successful farm producing mealies in the Free State.
Mm-hmm.
We have a food security problem in this country. It's productive. Yeah. It's been used. It employs people. You know, it would be hard to mount a nil compensation argument in a situation like that because, as you rightly say, it doesn't tick the boxes of the factors which apply there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be that the overriding interest in circumstances might be that to restore wrongs of the past or to reestablish a community, you may be able to justify it and balance all these factors. But I think it would be a hard thing to do, and I don't think that would be the primary target of any expropriation for nil compensation.
Yeah, 100%. I imagine there must be recourse to owners of expropriated land. This isn't just you get a knock on the door one day, and there must be some sort of recourse available.
No, Simon, quite right. And what you see in this act is actually quite a complex cascade of steps that need to be followed.
Mm-hmm.
All along the way, there are checks and balances. So, for example, your first step is whoever wants to expropriate has to first investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And decide if the land is even suitable for the purpose in the public interest or public policy. Having done that, they then have to issue a notice of intention to expropriate. That goes to owners, bondholders, anybody who has rights of occupancy. And at that point, the target of the intended expropriation and any other person affected under that list of right holders can make representations, can object to the intention. And that intention to expropriate must also express the reasons why. It's got to tell you in what public interest or public purpose is being served by the intended expropriation. That whole process goes on for a while and all of that information is gathered. And then you get to a third stage where they've now got to make a decision. Do we now, having heard everybody's objections or representations, do we now decide to expropriate? And then you've got to start the next stage of issuing the expropriation notice. And at that point, the same people who've got rights can object again.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can either invite you to initiate, as the expropriating state body, a mediation process with us, or in due course go to court with them to challenge the expropriation, both the value and the intention to expropriate itself. Mm-hmm. And that applies across the board, whether it's null value or full value. There's a long process of checks and balances. And what's encouraging from the Act is the fact that there is a strong emphasis on mediating first. Before we do everything, let's engage with each other at all stages of the process to see if we can come to some accommodation.
Gotcha. We'll leave it there. That's Richard Marcus, Director, Dispute Resolution at CDH. Appreciate the time. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.